Man, sometimes it's just hard to be happy, isn't it? It's been a week of violence again in our country, a lot of unrest. Yet, there is a promise and a call that as individual people, there is happiness in God's plan for us. Even when I can't imagine being stranded like the Thompsons are right now in Ohio, because usually I fix things when they break down. This is one that even I wouldn't have been able to fix without special tools and stuff. And still the call remains. And we're still firmly entrenched in this series titled Finding Your Happy Place. He is leading us to a place of confident, long-lasting happiness that does not disassociate us from the feelings of anger and fear and all those other things that as human beings we go through. Just because I'm happy as God intended doesn't mean I can't be sorrowful when somebody I know or myself, I'm going through a tough time with all that's going on with loss of life and anger and bitterness. And still God tells us that he wants us to be happy. Sometimes that seems like a message that can't be true. At times in the church, we haven't even taught it to be true. But it's true. God doesn't change, and he wants us to be happy. Now, it's a different happiness than we might define it, but it's happiness nonetheless. And so we're working through the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5. And I'm going to talk for a while without some aids on the screen, because I just want to go back. I actually found a resource in my study this last week that helped open my eyes to something. Actually, it was John Piper, if you know him. And as I read some things he had to say about where I was at in this week and where we were going, he helped me see how these Beatitudes, these statements of where our happiness can come from, are broken down into some groups that might help you when you're praying through them, when you're faced with, can I be this? Am I doing that? Because that's our happiness, that inside sense of happiness rests on those things. And he says the first three Beatitudes that we've already talked about are really about admitting a need we have that we can't fulfill on our own. And as psychologists, and the old tagline goes, your first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem. There is happiness in being able to say, have you ever done that? You've carried something secretly and you've been bound by it, and finally you found that right person to speak it to, and you go, whew, I still got to work on it, but boy, does that feel good that I'm just not doing this alone. So, and on our website, on our recent connections page, actually there's one message missing. It didn't get recorded that Sunday, but other than that, we have the series on. Poor in Spirit was week two in the series, and that was on the 28th of February, and that is that knowing that I'm helpless in myself to do anything to move toward God. So that's a realization that I have a need, and that he is the one who can fulfill the need. The second beatitude in the third week on the 14th of March was those who mourn will be comforted. I mourn over the sin that I have committed and the hurt that has come out of this toward other people and myself, and for sin in general. And then we receive comfort. And then blessed or happy are the meek, because they inherit the earth. That's a submissiveness to God. Your way, not mine. And so those three things position us to know we are in need and to whom that need will come from and who we can rely on, and there is happiness in those three things. The one we talked about last week was a hunger and thirst for righteousness, and this is that hinge pin in the middle of Beatitudes, kind of middle, where I now am accepting what it is that changes the fact that I'm in need and I can't do anything about it, and we get filled. We talked about that last week. And then what remains in the Beatitudes, three things, are fruits of righteousness that we prayed to be filled with after first being able to recognize, I need it. And by the way, though, there are three, these are the next three, are characteristics of God that we share with him, that he invites us to share. And then the last one is tough. The last one in its own category, so you know, pray about that in a few weeks ahead when we get to that one. But so today we're at week 6, Matthew 5, 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God is a merciful God. We say that all the time, the grace and mercy of God. in the characteristic, it's a characteristic of God, the call of this in our life, as is expressed in Luke chapter 6, verse 36 by Jesus, is be merciful just as your Father is merciful. So God isn't poor in spirit, and he doesn't need to mourn over his sin, and he doesn't need to be submissive to anybody, those first three. That's us understanding our place. And then we hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now this week we're going, we get to put on characteristics of God. And what is more joyful than knowing why would he do that? Because, you know, I've been a creep at different times in my life, just so you know. You've probably heard that if you're a regular here. Even when I'm not a creep, I can do a creepy or a sinful or a bad thing, even as I grow in him. And still, he says, I want to share my characteristics. So today, it's mercy. So number one, the meaning of mercy, what is it? We have to define it, because it can mean a bunch of different things. So I want your help with this. So we have a church definition of the coin that on one side is grace and on the other side is mercy. So I usually say, let's not do church language, but I'm encouraging you to give me the church. What do we say grace means? Unmerited favor. What do we say that mercy means? Anybody?
Forgiveness.
Those are right, by the way, but we say it is that he withholds the punishment we deserve. That's the church answer I'm looking for. That's what we usually say. Unmerited favor, so he gives us things, and he withholds the punishment we deserve, which is eternal punishment at the end of this life and no presence with him in this life or none of his resources. That's what we say. And I don't know if you've heard that. Apparently not. That's good. Because that's not really what the word means, used in the context here, as Jesus is speaking to these crowds of people who needed to hear a new thing and a new freedom and a new release and a new happiness that is available to them. Most of the common people he spoke to weren't happy with their circumstances under Roman rule and under the weight of the religious leaders who said, you have to do it this way and don't do that. And he was telling them, there's a happy way. So what it actually means simply is helping someone who is afflicted or seeking aid. Now, if you're familiar with that old church definition, it lands on the negative first and says, actually, it doesn't really admit that there is help. It's just that we don't get the punishment we deserve. I mean, that's a good thing if you've ever been caught with your hand in the cookie jar, whatever context that could be in your life, and you deserved punishment, whether it was jail or time out or going to bed without supper. Probably none of you kids have ever done that. Probably not. That used to be a favorite form of discipline. If that wasn't given, if you were given grace, the time I swung on the beam on the truss in the garage when I was 13 to impress my sister's girlfriend. And it broke. Now, I wasn't unusually large, but there was a knot, and it just broke. And I knew my dad and how he'd punished in the past, and I sweated and stewed and was anxious and stayed up till he came home after second shift from Ford. I knew what he'd do. He'd unbuckle the belt, take it out. I tried to hide one time, put a book in there. He just whipped the heck out of the back of my legs, and I never did that again. But when he came home, because I had been in such a stew, he laughed. And said something like, things happen, which was like, blew my mind, that's not my dad. And that punishment I deserved for breaking a rafter in the garage, I didn't get. That's a good thing. But this word mercy means helping someone who is afflicted or seeking aid. So it is initiated by need. Mercy happens because there is a need. It's first, and it's the most important thing, because anything else can change if we are acting out of mercy and being merciful people. The second thing is it ignores deservedness. Actually, true mercy doesn't make a judgment about whether anyone deserves or not. A need is presented, and if I have whatever it takes to meet that need or a portion of that need, I respond, even as God has done for us. Just think if you drove up on a wreck, and the cars were mangled, and there were bodies, you know, and one was trapped in the car, and you were the only one around, nobody came, no emergency personnel, no police, nothing, and you knew. It was just unconscious. It wasn't jammed. You could go up there and open that door and drag that person out because that's the need they had right then, and it was pretty dire. But you said, wait a minute, I got to find out if they deserve that. What kind of life have they lived? Maybe I should call. Maybe find out who this is. I can get his wallet out of his pants and call and say, hey, what's this guy? Now, of course we don't do that, right? We understand in that context. But when we are called to be people of mercy, that is true as well. There is a need, and I don't start by saying, do they deserve it? Our way of thinking, promoted by our experience and our woundedness, and an enemy who likes to rile us up against what God loves, will make that jump first almost every time. Unless maybe a car wreck where it's dire life-threatening and you might not even think about it. Isn't that right? And you think, well, they asked for that last week and they're asking for it again. No, there's a need there. That is what mercy means. It eliminates, if you go by need first and ignoring deservedness, what happens when we turn things back into a system of merit, you must earn my help. So an illustration, Jesus told an illustration. Many of you know this. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan, and we're not going to read the whole thing, so I'll set it up, and we're going to read kind of the end of it. And he's telling a story to help illustrate who I should love. That was the question, who's my neighbor, equaling, well, who should I really love and kind of who can I leave outside that circle? And he told the story, Jesus did, of this man who was traveling, good Hebrew man, Jewish man, traveling down the road, and he was put upon by robbers and thieves, and they beat him up and took everything he had, even his clothes, and left him dying in the ditch. And walking by came a priest who was holy and a Levite who worked in the temple. Both of those were supposed to be like the church. And they walk by. There are sermons and lessons in that. That's not where we're going. And then this Samaritan guy came by. And the Samaritan was an enemy of the man who was beaten and left for dead. And so the Samaritan sees someone in need. So Jesus tells the rest of this story in Luke 10, verses 34 and 30 through 37. Going over to him, the Samaritan soothed his wounds with olive oil and wine and bandaged them. Then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn, where he took care of him. The next day he handed the innkeeper 2 silver coins, telling him, take care of this man. If his bill runs higher than this, I'll pay you next time I'm here. Now, which of these 3 would you say was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by bandits? Jesus asked. The man replied, the one who showed him
mercy.
Yeah. Then Jesus said, yes, now go and do the same. We see in this illustration that Jesus shared with them a whole bunch of what the definition of mercy is, responding to need, not taking into account whether someone deserved it or not. The kind of enemies these two people groups were the kind of enemies where later on Jesus' disciples, when he talked to a Samaritan people, went to Samaria, thought, what is wrong with this? And the Samaritans, when he talked to the woman at the well, said, why are you even talking to me? I mean, you're a man and you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. And they were bitter enemies who once were one family called by God out of Egypt and even before that through Abraham. So we see this truth about what mercy is, which is most important we understand if we're going to be people of mercy. The Samaritan soothed the other guy's wounds. He bandaged them, he took care of him, he took him to an inn, he gave the innkeeper money from his own pocket and said, it's probably going to be more than that, so I will settle up when I come back through here. And he just kept saying, there is a need here, and I'm in a position, a unique position to meet the need. I happen to have money. I happen to have what it needed in wine and oil to pour on the wound. I have what, so the need is there, and mercy says, I'm going to meet that need. And there's joy and happiness in meeting that need. So he gave an illustration. By the way, you see this over and over and over again in the parables Jesus told, in the prodigal son. And you name almost any, and you'll see there is a call or an opportunity for mercy. And some people take it, and some people don't take the opportunity. Not only did he give an illustration, but he gave his own personal example. That's B, if you have your hand out. Under number 1, his personal example, he showed mercy. Romans 5:6, when we were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. This is probably one of the most tamest ways that it put it. Paul wrote in Ephesians, we were at one point without hope and without God in the world. We were enemies against God because of sin. We were in the ditch, naked and bleeding. And Jesus walked by. And he knew we didn't deserve it. But he met our needs on the cross. By the way, we must stop here. For those here and online that don't understand this merciful act of Jesus to give his life so that we could be free from our sin and have a relationship with God. And there's time for this, probably mention it later on, but there's nothing more important in this world that you make that decision to follow Jesus. And I challenge you not to let what you don't know stop you from doing that one thing you can figure out as we talk together and as the Word speaks and as we speak to one another. Ask Jesus. Accept Jesus. You don't have to really even ask him. He's done it. It's done. So, that's what mercy is. So, number two in your handout, if you have one, what are the requirements of mercy? There's a couple of requirements of mercy. They're very related and hardly to be separated, but it helps to think sometimes in terms of different elements. A is reprioritizing personal needs. If you're going to be merciful, you have to reprioritize your own needs because you have them. And the call to mercy never says your needs don't count, personally, to me, if I'm the one being called to be merciful in a particular situation. I have needs. Sometimes my helping someone else with their needs will stall the fulfillment of my needs. And that's part of the call to be merciful. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 10:24, don't be concerned for your own good, but for the good of others. A guy at one of my past churches, he and his wife were saving up. I can't remember what project they were going to do. Wood floors or something in their home, and they were saving up over a long time. He wasn't wealthy, didn't make a buku bunch of bucks, and he had finally saved enough to do that. But then there came a family to the church that had a need. I was so proud when he shared with me that they had decided they were not going to do this project, and they gave that money to a family in need. He and his wife, on the back burner. And this is the other half of that. B is the requirement of mercy, a personal dependence on God. Because when we put our needs on the back burner, often, well, if you think like I think, I go, well, when's this going to happen for me? What about me? And I don't mean that in the selfish sense either. It's just a reality. We need some things to happen. When is that going to happen? When we have mercy and we have done this, this is another one of those coins that has, really, it's the same coin, two sides. I prioritize my personal needs and meet someone else's needs first. And I also say, and I'm going to depend on you, Lord, to meet that need I have in the right time. So what I'm doing is agreeing with God with this was not the right time. Boy, isn't that hard? Especially if you've been planning something for a long time. That's hard for me. But when we give that dependence up, he will supply those things in their time. So number one is what mercy is. Number two, the requirements of mercy. Those two things are important. Those things are things, these are prayer items as we walk through life and have opportunities to be merciful. Number three, then, what does merciful mean? It's really easy. It's having a character of, or the character of mercy. So someone would think of you and go, they might not use the word mercy, so we admit here, mercy is a church word, but we've defined it. It means I see a need and I help someone in that need. So that's what we mean by it. They would look at you and go, oh, Mark Fornelius? He's merciful. They might use a different word, but they'd know he'd help. Now, don't be making faces at me. I know you would. I know he has that character. and being merciful, which blesses us or brings us into the happiness associated with this particular thing, comes when we are known, not because we just did one merciful thing and the rest of the time we're tight and we're gimme grab and don't borrow my tools. That's my thing I have to work on all the time. But that we're known. That is a person of mercy. Simple. Number four, then, mercy is received. Blessed are the merciful, because they will receive mercy, and we've already received, or the ability to receive mercy has already been paid for. We already mentioned it, but we mention it again. The initial mercy that Jesus completed by his experience of arrest and beating and hanging on the cross and dying and being buried in that tomb and rising on the third day. As the psalmist described the happiness that comes from what Jesus accomplished. Blessed is he or she whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man or woman whose sin the Lord does not count against him and in whose spirit is no deceit. Mercy. We only have to receive. It's already offered. You know, you can come across somebody in need and you can offer what you have to help that need. They don't have to accept. And there's a once in a while when they don't, particularly when it is a need based or a merciful gift based on a spiritual need that's not yet perceived as God works us through the process and brings us to a enlightenment, not the New Age spacey lie of enlightenment, but that I have the aha that God is there and I need him and he is committed to the process, so we're patient with one another, right? But this is the initial mercy. How happy are those whose sins are forgiven? Isn't it interesting to think that every person in the world has had their sins forgiven by the act of Jesus, but they must, to realize it and be happy in it, they have to say, yes, I accept that sacrifice. It's already done. He doesn't have to go back and do it. So much blessing. That's how we get the poor in spirit, the first beatitude. That's how we get the mourning that sin is negative in our life. It's not just what somebody else doesn't want us to do. It hurts. And the meekness to be obedient to God that are covered in the first three beatitudes, because mercy has already been shown. That's initial mercy, A, under four, and B is comprehensive mercy. A never-ending flow of mercy from God to us is available to every one of us. It is continual. Paul said in Romans 8:32, he who did not spare his own son but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? All things. So that gives us the quantity, because that's one of the questions we ask. You know, I'm delaying my need because someone else has a need and I just happen to have the things that that person needs. And when is my need going to get met? Well, so we're developing our personal dependence on God as we go back and think about the requirements of mercy. Are some exempt? Well, in a sense, but that's next. There is a quantity, all things. He can give us all needful things. And then he talks about, we are taught about the quality of those things. Because obviously, if I ask for something that falls in the world of rebellion against God, he would not do that for us. So this is a side note, but important to remember. Needs are boundaried by the character of God. So sometimes the need is giving somebody something. Sometimes the need is not giving them what they tell you they need because it's harmful. So this is not just a wide open, hey, tell me what you need, I'll try my best to do. No, it's not like that at all. It's the shape and look of God. So the quality expressed in 1 John chapter 5, verses 14 and 15, this is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, He hears us, and if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we've asked of him. So we have the quality of it and the quantity and the quality. It's everything you need, not just some things you need. But it's needs that God knows are real needs, not just everything that sometimes we think we need. I know I've used this illustration here, and you may or may not remember it, but when I was, the year before I went into ministry and was appointed to my first church, I wanted to build onto my house. Lived in Ross Common. And I had this grant. I still have the plans. I ran across them a few weeks ago. Upper level, I was going to be a draftsman too. And I was going to have a circular stairway, and I don't know how I was going to get the grand piano up there, but I was going to have a grand piano. So I'm like, I don't know, 25 years old or something like that. And I went down to the bank, and I had my drawings, and I had applied for a loan, and so I was in this, you know, journey out of turning my back on God for 9 years, 8 or 9 years, and being back with him and heading into ministry and doing classes and all that kind of stuff, and the bank approved me for the loan. But then God also spoke to me and said, don't do it. But I wasn't sure where I was going yet, whether it was full-time ministry or maybe I was just going to be the teen Sunday school teacher, which I was at the time. And then when the time came, a year or 2 years later, when I was appointed to the first church, my first church, and I had to sell that house, I had 6 weeks to sell that house. I would have been under a weight of debt. I bought that under land contract. Nice old folks. They were too tired to have a summer home anymore, you know, so they gave me a good deal. And I was able to sell that home within that 6 weeks because God didn't, and he told me and helped me know, just because you think you need this big two-story house with a circular stairway and a grand piano upstairs doesn't mean it's a good thing for you. And here it says, his will. And because I was open to his will, it was okay for him to say, don't do it. And I could say, I don't need that. So I didn't. And he blessed. I was way happier going into ministry debt-free. Believe me, not many people do that. So that brings us to C under mercy received, which is called missed mercy. No separate verse for this, but it is attached to 1 John 5:14 and 15 that we just talked about, according to his will, and the fact that it is about real needs. Mercy meets real needs. The above and beyond, over the top things, that's a little different than mercy. Mercy meets real needs. So since we get our quantity and quality of our own personal needs being met, and the premise of these Beatitudes is, if you are here, this is the result. And this one particularly says, blessed are the merciful, or happy are the merciful when you show mercy. It is just as true to say, then, if you are not merciful, that kind of happiness is going to be very elusive. And we don't have to, you know, it's really simple. Since our true needs are defined by God, and he knows every true need we have, and we are not being merciful like God is merciful, or trying to do that, because that it's a condition that we're always walking in to be better and better at that and understand it more, our perception of our real needs is altered, because we're not following God in this. And let's face it, the things that turn from desires to needs or needs back into desires are so based on our perception, aren't they? If you're trying to heat your bowl of soup and the microwave stops, you need to go to Home Depot and get a microwave. But if you look in the refrigerator and go, well, I've got hot dogs and ramen noodles and all that good health food, thank you. Then it's not a need anymore. It's, well, I need to figure out what's wrong with it, and we can. But I've got other stuff that's not a need. That's an extra. When we are not practicing what God calls us to practice in imitation of him, after we've mourned, we've been poor in spirit, we know we don't have it, and we've mourned over that sin and that separation, and we've been meek and surrendered to God, and we follow in his footsteps, we are able to discern what is a true need and what is not, and we will ask him a true need, and he will give it at the right time and at the right amount, we'll be happy. But if I ask him for something that he knows is not a need, but I think it's a crying need, and I don't get it, how happy do I feel? How happy do you feel when you ask for something and you don't get it? I don't feel happy.
You gotta start crying. Someone wants it bad enough, don't cry.
And that's right, cry, stomp your feet. Okay, well, that doesn't work with God. So this is about getting our happiness by being merciful. So we, in a sense, we could use it this way because we use this word this way all the time. Lord, I am, where my needs are concerned, I'm at your mercy, so I can be a merciful person. So we're left with a couple of questions, or a question and a prayer, and all of this in consideration as well. Today, who needs your mercy? I bet if you go back just a week, you'll probably find a place where you could have met someone's need, and you didn't. Now, it might not be that you made a judgment about their deservedness. It might be that you felt you were too busy. Again, that's wrapped up in this, and it's something we need to consider. Who needs your mercy maybe today? Who needs something that you'd rather do something else, or something with that something else, but they have a need right now? God says, Jesus said, to the people on the mountainside and to us, if you are merciful with this, disregarding, in a sense, what you feel your need is right at this moment, you'll find happiness. And the thing about that happiness is we can't predefine it, but it is promised to follow when we do that, which is much like a lot of our journey following God. We trust him because he's done enough in our life to help us to go through the tough things that don't seem quite how we want them to be. And the prayer is, Lord, help me be merciful. When you pray something like that, never pray it without a place, a note app, a tablet and a pen, a Word doc, whatever. Start writing down, expect God to speak to you. Lord, help me be merciful. Because what he'll identify for you is places that keep you from being merciful when you should be. Not getting the opportunity. And what we're doing when that happens is we're limiting our happiness. The more imitation of God we do, not because we have to, because he loves us and we love him, the more happiness that comes, the more joy that comes into our hearts. Who needs your mercy? And pray, Lord, help me to be merciful. And we close with this. Familiar words from the book of Lamentations. My favorite hymn comes from this passage of Scripture, Lamentations 3, 22 and 23. The faithful love of the Lord never ends. His mercies never cease. Great is his faithfulness. His mercies begin afresh each morning. Be merciful as God is merciful. Let's stand. We're going to pray. Team, we're going to come up, and we're going to do The More I Seek Him Again. That's my executive decision. And it is a call to seek. If you have struggled with mercy or any other issue as the Holy Spirit talks to you today, spend some time in your chair at the altar asking him to lead you in that direction where your happiness will come and you will give him glory for it. Father, thank you. Thank you for being merciful. We have to start there. You are so merciful. We don't understand, and I don't think till we get to the next life we're going to understand how undeserving we really were. I know that's the effects of sin, its seriousness, sometimes elude me, especially when it's my own, because I want to make it less. And here we end on this verse that reminds us that your mercies never end. In spite of that, and not only that I didn't initially deserve any kind of look from you or regard, life even, but I mess up, knowing you. There are times where I sin against you, but your mercies never fail, never stop. They're new every morning, and every time I need mercy, you're there for us. So, Lord, let that be our example today as you call us to be people of mercy. And as we sing, I pray you would inform our spirits by your Spirit to think about who right now, today, needs mercy. They have just a need. Help us to separate ourselves from a formal, predetermined definition and key in on this truth. Mercy meets real needs. And Lord, help us to be merciful. Lead us to confess. Lead us to do whatever we need to do so that we are merciful as you are merciful. And we commit it all to you in Jesus' name. Amen.